Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who ran 11 miles yesterday but still didn't escape himself. It's Richard Herring! Oh, thank you very much. Very polite. Very polite round of applause. Thank you very much for that. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Robert De Niro from Meet the Fockers the other day. He calls it Rahalastapa. That's what he calls it. That's my impression. He said, "You talking to me?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh, I call it Rahalastapa." And welcome to the show. I'm thinking of starting up a lookalike agency where I only hire myself out as Brad Pitt doing an impression of Robert De Niro. That is my... And only not without speaking as well. So welcome to the show. Yeah, my race is very soon as we record this 3 weeks. If you're listening at home, it's already happened and it's going okay. It's very tiring running a long way. So do sponsor me at justgiving.com/monoball if you fancy that. So all the money's going to the hospitals that mutilated my body. You wouldn't do that as if a serial killer did it to you. You wouldn't give him money, would you? Don't know why this. Anyway, I was on Twitter the other day. I saw Alan Cumming is on Twitter. I think he's got a book coming out or something. And it struck me. I hope that Alan Cumming shouts his own name at the point of an orgasm. That's what I was thinking. Alan Cumming. That's what I hope happens. My joke about him. Yeah, I had an injury. I cut my finger yesterday. There still might be as old as it. Yeah, I was trying to open a childproof battery pack with a cheese knife because the kitchen scissors were in the dishwasher. We've got other scissors, but I couldn't be bothered to go and find them instead. So I thought I'd use a not very sharp knife to do the job, but it had a surprisingly sharp because I was using the prong end. And I kind of forgot that the sharp part of a cheese knife, and it was sharp when it cut me. I just wondered if that was the most middle-class injury that has
that has ever happened to anyone. It turns out it wasn't. I did mention on Twitter, and the rest of my day, my Twitter feed was full of mainly avocado-based mishaps, have to be said, but a random selection of them are Sean Hinton. I burnt myself on the steam from a Wi-Fi-enabled slow cooker that contained a Nigel Slater duck recipe. Andy Keane, I once injured my wrist opening a jar of olives for an after-school classic symposium. Izzy Mant, comedian and producer. I aged 10, I cracked my head open on Christmas Day due to descending the stairs in my new tap shoes. Greg Jenner, a previous guest on this podcast a couple of times, cut myself on the strings of an antique lute. Dave Hughes, I gave myself a paper cut on my National Trust handbook. A couple of people have done that. It's very high quality paper. Dan Bowker, I sliced off a good chunk of my thumb on a mandolin making courgette spaghetti. You get the idea. It's a surprisingly popular confessional for the bourgeoisie, as it turned out. Right, I'll leave that bit till later. Good. That's my stand-up for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You talking to me? Can't do the voice. Can't do the voice. So, look, it's time to welcome this week's guest. He is probably best known as the host of Who Dares Sings. That's why we're here. Who Dares Sings, remember that? No. Had a lot of things to choose from for the amazing Ben Shepherd, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Fan of the podcast. Ben Shepherd. Who Dares Sings.
Who Dares Sings?
Who Dares Sings? Tell us about Who Dares Sings, Ben.
Who Dares Sings? Do you know, I was wondering what you were going to pick out. It wasn't that.
No.
Thank goodness you didn't pick out what I thought you were going to pick out. Who Dares Sings was a show that I hosted with Denise Van Outen. And it was built, the premise was around the sort of PlayStation game SingStar.
Oh, yes.
So we had an audience that were singing along. And if you sung in tune to the song that we were singing as an audience, if you were the most in tune, there were 100 in the middle, you got to come down and play the game. And you had to sing a song that was chosen from a big list. And depending on how in tune you were, how well you sung it, depending on how much money you were going to go through, and you had to sing against, so I'd be singing against you.
Yeah.
And you'd be singing a Kylie Minogue number, obviously.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'd be singing a Neil Diamond number. Yeah. And if I sung it better than you, if I was more in tune, if the computer, this was the big flaw. If the computer assessed that I had sung it better than you, I would go through.
Yeah.
So the problem with it was...
I'm not sure that was the big flaw.
No. You are right. But Denise Van Outen, big West End, Broadway, internationally renowned recording artist.
Yeah.
She would sing in rehearsals. I would sing. I beat her every time. because she would embellish it and make it sound fabulous and gorgeous. And I would sing it very straight down the line, like the choir boy that I was. And I would win. And it used to drive her mad. But we did, actually, it was one of those shows. And I've made a lot of shows that were brilliant fun to make and were awful to watch. So there's this thing that happens when you're making something, you're doing a pilot for something, you kind of go, you always talk about, yeah, that was great. What do you think it's going to be like to watch at home on a screen? It was all about being in the studio because it was a great, everyone was singing and dancing, having an amazing time. Everyone at home was going, this is rubbish. But we did have, still the immortal line was uttered on that show one evening, which is what, and this was, these always made it for us. So the woman's come down, she's got through to the final and she's playing, she's got all the way through to the final, she's about to sing for the final and she's sung and she's got a certain amount of money, but obviously there's a gamble, she can take the risk. And the question is she going to take the risk, Rich? Yeah. And I've gone, so, do you want to take the risk? He said, I'm not sure. I said, should we ask your friends? So her friend's in the audience. And her friend, Sheila, was up in the audience. I said, Sheila, should she take the risk? And she said, take the risk. Do it for the caravan. And that was it. Ben, I'm going to do it for the caravan. And the point of her coming was to win the caravan. She took the risk. She won the caravan. And I still think about her now. When we think about these amazing prizes that you have, you know, they loved it. She won this caravan. Yeah. And whenever she's on her holidays, wherever she is in her caravan, thinking about Who Dares Sings. So you lot might not know, but she's still enjoying her holiday.
Well, she'll go, I got this from Who Dares Sings. And exactly. They go, what? And they'll say, do you think that's offensive to the SAS to compare singing and tune?
They loved it.
What would you have chosen as your credit if you'd have been looking for Ben Shepherd credits from IMDb?
I don't know. No, I would hate to point out. I thought that you may have gone for I was in a computer game.
Oh.
Called Hard War.
Okay.
Like, this was the first thing straight out of university, and I thought you might have really super obscure.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Oh. That's quite far down the Wikipedia page.
What did you have to do in that?
I played a character. So it was about 1997, so it was just as a lot of computer games were starting to employ actors and actresses to play sort of sim characters.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they don't do that at all, do they? It was going to be this big thing. Hollywood's going to have... All these Hollywood actors were going to be in computer games. And I just started working for a TV company, and the makeup artist's husband was directing this computer game. She said, "Do you want a part in it?" I said, "Yes." And it was brilliant because I was playing a character, and if you had to go through... I mean, I imagine one or two of you like a computer game that are here. from what we just told me about you in the past.
And just looking at the front row.
And so you have to go through the various levels. It's really obscure. Has any of you played Hard War? Yeah, that's really obscure. Yeah. As popular as Who Dare Sings. But you had to go through various levels. But it was only if you got to a certain point you would see the bits that I had done. And I just played this character that had a couple of pieces to camera to do. But at the end of it, I got beaten up and I got killed on camera. So I got to die, which was brilliant. Great. And I filmed it and I drove up to my friend's house and my now wife, she was girlfriend then, we turned up at my friend's house and I left the makeup on because the makeup was incredible. I mean, I was 19. I got black eyes and tattoos and I just looked amazing. And I got in the house and I went, and I said, I just pulled over at the petrol station, got into a fight, this bloke's like, and Annie lost it. She was like, phone the police. It took me everything to stop her phoning the police because I had this black eye and this cut down my neck. It was amazing. But I've never seen it. I've never been able to find it.
Oh, well, look out. Someone will have played it at home. Do email in and let us know if you killed Ben Shepherd in that game. That'd be fantastic. Well, part of the reason I wanted you to come on is you're a listener to Halastapa.
I am.
And you were just telling backstage that you had the kind of out of body experience of sort of be listening to it as a listener and then it suddenly being about you quite often.
It's weird. Well, yes. So I started listening to the podcast a long time ago, and there was the strangest moment when I'd left White City. We filmed Good Morning Britain's filmed at the old BBC building now, and I was going over to the train station, the tube stop, and I was listening, just minding my own business, and all of a sudden you start banging on about Tipping Point and talking about what an idiot I am. for asking questions about why is he asking, why is it going to drop? What do you think of that? It's physics, Ben. We can't control it. And I'm sort of looking around. It's one of those, obviously I get in it, and you look around thinking, is anyone else hearing this? And I just got really hot and sweaty, really uncomfortable. And then I just got really indignant. I was like, what do you mean? Of course you've got to ask why you're doing it. And then carried on. And every time you do it, it's the weirdest thing because... And obviously, I became aware of your obsession with Tipping Point and getting on to Tipping Point, which I had to facilitate for you. but then the other day, I was listening to the PowerPod the other day, and the guys were talking about it. And it always strikes me as very strange. It's lovely as well. Yeah. It always makes me giggle, but then I'm slightly nervous as to what anyone's going to say.
Yeah, but the thing is, it is just you commenting on counters falling down, where they're going to... So, you know, it's a valid point I was making
No, because your point, Richard Herring, as you well know, was just being a grumpy old so-and-so because you couldn't get on the show. This is a rubbish show. And he's... Because the counter would drop... And then you always made the point about, and I would say, what do you think about where it's dropped?
Yeah.
And, well, what should I think, Ben? It's physics. It's just dropped. But of course you've got an idea, and you know this only too well. Like, he pretends. Like, we all know how competitive he is. You think he's going to turn up and he's going to be all blasé and stuff. Honestly, he was like a kid in a sweet shop. Yeah, we've had some people come on and get excited, but no one got quite as excited. Yeah, compared to Biggins, you blew Biggins away.
Right, really.
And he was dressed for panto.
I have to admit that I wasn't as sarcastic about it as I thought I would be.
Yes.
Because I did get caught up in the magic of it. There is an emergency question as well in my emergency question book, which I apologise misspelt your name, but that's your fault.
Have you really?
This is in the original emergency question book, and you know you're probably the best person to answer this question. What do you think Ben Shepherd really feels about presenting Tipping Point?
Tell you what Ben Shepherd thinks about it. He absolutely loves it. Every single minute of it.
When they first came to you and said, Ben, got this idea for a game show. do you remember those machines at the arcade?
Yeah, the penny falls.
2p in. We're going to do that, but with really big counters and stuff. Did you think, yeah, that's not going to work? I'll do Who Dares Sings instead.
No, because I'd just done Who Dares Sings. I was happy the phone had rung, Rich. I think, so you're right. Of course, you look at something like that, you think, now, is this going to work? So here's we're talking about the challenge of sort of something in the studio. Is it going to translate at home on telly? When I first got approached, they said, but this is what we're going to do. I said, that sounds extraordinary. I loved those machines as a kid. Who doesn't love those machines? Yeah. I get sent weekly so many pictures of kids playing the machine and wherever the arcade is on their holidays, particularly in the summer, and commentating on stuff. It's really, really lovely. Like, kids love it. We all love it. We've got that nostalgia about it. But a giant one of those, is it just a bit gimmicky? And then I went and I saw the first iteration of the machine, which had been built by this amazing guy called Steve Webster, Webbo, who, if you ever see it, if there's a game or contraption, or like the cube, for example, on the cube, all the cube games, the crystal dome in the crystal maze, Webbo's built all those things. If there's something on telly that's built that works really well, he's built it. If it doesn't work so well, he always says it wasn't him. And everyone always says, is there a man dropping them in? And actually, that first time we did the run through, there was the four, what we now call drop zones, and it was a really stripped back version, and Webbo was at the top. And I was going, where do you want to drop it? And the woman was going, oh, sort of on the left-hand side. And I'd go, what, go across. And he was shuffling along. And when do you want to drop it? Now. And he was dropping it in. And it was one of those things going, this looks so strange. But it was brilliant fun to play. Now, you've played it.
Yeah.
And it is so involving. I've just been with a friend who's done the show as well. I was just exercising with him. And we were talking about it. And he said, I haven't watched it. And it was the best fun to play. Even better to play than to watch, he said.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you can comment on that. And that's what I get every single time. So as soon as I thought, well, look, it's brilliant to play. They're going to let us do a few. We'll see how it gets on. We had a great laugh making it. And very quickly, initially, it's like, what is this? And then very quickly, it built up the momentum. And now, you know, series 12, 1,500 episodes later, it's still going strong. And I still, you know, as sarcastic and cynical as you would like to be, you know, it's an absolute gift. It's really become woven into people's daily lives. And that's something that we never knew it was going to do that. Yeah. None of us ever knew that was what it was going to do. And I get sent lovely messages from people watching it because it's huge in New Zealand and Australia. It gets shown in Africa. We had a girl who was living over here who's from Ghana, and her family will be able to watch it. It was on in Ghana on one of the BBC channels or one of the channels that is streamed over there. And then I get messages from people saying, my grandparents are very lonely, very ill, and it gives them the comfort in the afternoons, and that's really special. And you just forget that. We're just making a TV show. But there is an essence to it and a heart to it that I think really shines through, and I just love it, Rich.
I expect if you live in a country where they don't have those machines in arcades, it would be even better, though, right? It's just as surreal.
Even more magic.
Yeah.
Like, what? What is this machine that gives out £50 coins?
Now, someone emailed me, and I think I might have talked about this on a previous podcast, and said, and I didn't see how the machines worked when I was there, and they insisted that the machine works with a man with a broom pushing the shelves. Is that, can you confirm if that is true or false?
He's sitting on a bicycle, and he cycles, and that powers it in and out. That's not how it happens. Okay. No. I can't believe, did you not nick round the back of the machine?
I didn't have a look. I should have done, because I was too excited about it.
You're not really supposed, I mean, you don't want to ruin the magic of it as well, do you?
Not if it's a man with a broom. I wondered actually whether someone on Twitter was saying, you know, it doesn't quite capture the magic of the original machines, in that they had like weird things like packets of refreshers and stuff in them, but also if you would try and tip the machine,
give it a nudge,
and then an angry man would come out.
Yeah,
Do you think about having an angry man if you could just nudge it a little bit?
Webbo's right on the back. He gets very angry. If anyone goes near it remotely aggressively, it's a very sensitive piece of kit.
Okay.
But we did talk about, and we have, from series one and two or whatever it was, we did talk about, I really wanted to put things into the machine.
Yeah.
And that's why we have mystery counters now. They sort of, similar to that. The problem we have is that the unscrupulous, arcade owners can use their machines in a way where they're not controlled by Ofcom and regulations. Much as we would like to put gold Rolex watches and fluffy teddy bears on, that might obscure some money coming out. Okay. And we're not allowed. We have talked about trying to do that, but we can't. We have to make it sadly, as fair as possible.
And also on the original machine, someone was saying there's a channel where the coins fall in.
Drop out down the side.
You should have that for you. That's what you get. You get whatever. Get out of the machine.
Now, that's something we can look into. Okay. And they also play the sound of, it's like Vegas, they play the sound of winning.
Right.
It's winning coins, dropping in to drag you in
and
all that sort of stuff.
Now, also, this week I've been watching Squid Game. Have you watched Squid Game
yet? I have, yeah.
Do you not think Tipping Point would be good if it had that sort of life and death element to it?
Yeah.
It would really fit into Squid Game, wouldn't it?
And we did it in Korean.
It would.
Did you spend the whole time Googling what that 2 million won is?
Like, yes.
The whole time I had to have my one calculator so I knew they're only playing for 200 quid. That's not so much. Until it gets to the end, and then it was really worth it, wasn't it?
I think it's about £28 million, something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
I did Google it. Because it's confusing that it's won as well, because it sounds like you've won.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah. It's good until the VIPs come in and they're meant to be talking.
No spoilers though, Rich.
Well, the VIPs come in, but the way they talk in English, but it's like if I was trying to write Koreans, how Koreans speak.
Badly dubbed.
It sort of comes out really. It's a good show.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
I think a late night version where contestants could be killed if they don't make enough.
I imagine it's been pitched somewhere along the way.
It's going to happen, right? I tell you, Squid Game is going to. There will be a game show. Yeah. Where I've always thought, like, if there was a game show where there was like 100 contestants and the winner, I think there's an emergency question about it. The winner gets £10 million, and everyone else, there's a second prize, third place gets a £10 book token, but the person who comes last is executed. Right, I think people would do it because they think, 100 to 1, I'm not going to get executed, and they're not going to do it, they won't execute me, but then you do it.
Then you actually do it. Have you pitched this?
I haven't, but I reckon people would watch it.
Go for it. You never know. There's got to be a streaming service somewhere that would do it. Also, then you just put it on Twitch with your snooker.
I'll do it myself. You're right. I shouldn't give these
millions
away.
You'd be every contestant, and then you'd have to kill yourself at the end.
What I liked about it, and I can't remember the young lady's name. There was a young lady from Love Island on.
Olivia Atwood.
And she wasn't getting much right, but there was a point where it was the coins were so balanced, I looked at it and realised if she gets this question right and that goes, she is going to win, she's going to beat me. So you can have someone get everything right and not get any coins out, and then someone gets one question right and wins.
Absolutely. And that happens regularly. And I think that's one of the things that people love about it, unless you're playing on the game and you feel like you've got a sort of advantage because you've got strategy or you've got some decent general knowledge. It's a real leveler. Undoubtedly, we have it all the time. It's a huge leveler in that someone can set up all those counters. It can do something. And perhaps the least deserving person in terms of answering questions gets through.
Yeah.
That's the thing that sort of still surprises me now. And I've stood in front of it and the shelf goes in and out. I think there's something quite hypnotic about the shelf as well. But there's still that element of not knowing what's going to happen that sort of comes out of nowhere.
That's because, you know, you can't predict what's going to happen, can you, with gravity? Because of gravity,
you don't know what's going to happen. Of course, but you can comment on whether you like where it's gone or not.
Yeah,
that was what I was getting at.
Do you think you understand gravity better? Do you think you are better at having watched that so many times? Do you think you're better at judging whether things are going to fall, just in life?
One of my favourite films. I love Sandra. Sandra Bullock, amazing.
Right.
Yeah. I think I am better at predicting what it's going to do.
Yeah.
Because I've watched it so many times.
Yeah, we should be, shouldn't you?
But I still wouldn't be able to tell you, because I can't sort of guarantee it.
No. Someone was asking on Twitter how you count them up so quickly when they fall, and I said you were like Rain Man, and you were able to.
That's exactly how.
That's how it does. There's no pause.
Initially, when a secret about what we did when we first started, the idea was that the counters would fall into the wind zone, the tray at the bottom. And there'd be a very clever mechanism that would weigh them really quickly, tell me how many there were, and then the tray would sort of drop down and they'd all fall out the back and close it. And that didn't work.
Okay.
No, very quickly realised we just got to count them. I got to count them 3 or 4 times as well, because you have to make sure that none of them have been forgotten or missed.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very strict.
It's,
isn't you it? Know, You've been
it's good. It is. It's a very good show. I recommend it. And there was a last month or a couple of months ago, there was a couple of the sort of stupid answers that had come up, which you must have a lot of. So there was someone saying, "What's the city in the Netherlands?" That I can't remember what it was, but something to do with the.
Where is the European Court of Justice? Which city in the Netherlands would you find the European Court of Justice?
And they said Belgium.
They said Belgium. And then the other guy said, no, it's not Belgium, it's Geneva.
Yeah.
I think so. But as you know, when you're under pressure, with all, like, you've got to give a caveat to anyone that's willing to go on a quiz show, first and foremost. But we can still enjoy their questions.
Yeah.
So we've had a few over the years. We had one the other day, is which political party shares its name with a collective noun for moles? Liberal Democrats was the answer I got. When that was one that she'd thought about.
Yeah.
That was not, like, under pressure.
It's UKIP, right? It's UKIP. It's a UKIP of moles.
Everyone knows what those little moles are like. The mythical creature, the unicorn, has what structure on its head?
Right.
An icicle. Date, traditionally, is Christmas celebrated on? Wednesday. One of my favourites, and I can't do this justice because the guy that gave us the answer was a Geordie, so he's a fabulous accent. And again, this was a round three question, which is when you get to pass it backwards and forwards like the Liberal Democrats. And it was a question, and so he had a really good think about it. And I said, the question was, horses of a reddish-brown colour share their name with what sort of window? So horses of a reddish-brown colour share their name with what sort of window? And he's had a good think about this, and he said, I'm going to go for this one, Ben. I think I know the answer. Yep, we're actually doing a house up at the moment, and I've put a couple of these in. I'm like, great. Sounds like he knows it. So horses of a reddish-brown colour share them in what type of window? Is it Velux, Ben? And there's priceless moments like that I think are really magical.
Yeah.
It's bay, by the way, Rich.
Good.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
No.
I wouldn't have gone for
it.
I'd have passed that over.
Yes, you could have passed it.
But I couldn't remember Mills and Boone, which, there was... your mind goes blank, and I passed it over, and then by the time it came, she got it wrong. It was quite good because I could just pass it to Oliver and she would get it wrong anyway.
Which some would say is quite cruel.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It was all about winning. There was a guy from Poldark or something on it.
Joe McFadden.
Yeah.
Amazing Joe McFadden.
And look, I think he was in the Crow Road.
He
Joe
was,
McFadden.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And the Crow Road, they changed the book, The Crow Road, which was about him being a stand-up comedian who toured with Newman and Badil, and on the TV show it was Lee and Herring, and they went, yeah, they're shit, they're wankers or something like that. So it was a long game I was playing against Joe McFadden.
No.
But I got him back.
So you were in the Crow Road when they made the TV?
They mentioned, we were on TV when they mentioned, so in the Crow Road, the guy was, I don't know if it was his character, was...
he was the lead, wasn't he?
Was touring with Lee and Herring. So, yeah, we were a big deal.
Did you bring that up with Joe?
No. I didn't realise that till afterwards.
After you'd seen him off.
But I was glad, because he was annoyed, because I tactically nudged him out of the game.
You passed, didn't you? Made him play.
Right, and he was quite pissed off. Having travelled to Bristol just to get knocked out straight away.
People on Twitter don't like that.
I know.
Don't pass. If you pass a counter in the round one, which is a tactical thing, isn't it? Yeah, sets the tone.
It's good.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now, do you remember when we met before Tipping Point? We met in a very special occasion.
Buckingham Palace.
We did meet at Buckingham Palace. You and I think our first time, maybe it might not have been the first time.
You were waiting, weren't you?
We had actually two of the people who used to come to our show were waiting. It was a very weird day.
That night?
They were waiting that night, and I was just talking about them and saying, oh, I haven't been at rehearsal for a while. They're butlers at the... They're butlers at Buckingham Palace, and looked around, and one of them was over my shoulder giving me food. And then they never came again. We were introduced to Princess Anne at the same time.
Amazing.
It was
an extraordinary night, though, wasn't it?
It was
for the Motor Neurone Disease Charity.
Yeah.
And we had on Good Morning Britain, we'd quite early on, as it turned out. I thought it was quite late because the Americans had been doing it for a while. We did the Ice Bucket Challenge, and we did it live. And that sort of really kicked off people doing it over here in the UK. And it had this huge impact on the charity. I think the charity sort of, the money that they made from that was just astronomical compared to what they usually make. It was just an extraordinary thing. And she is the patron of the MND Association. And so they said, look, would you guys like to come along and come for dinner? That's why I was there.
Yeah.
Why were you there?
Well, I was there.
What had you done?
I've done nothing. I've done quite a lot of work for Scope. Right. And the guy who used to be work for Scope had moved to the Motor Neurone Disease Charity, and he had two spare seats.
So
I think me and Greg Davis kind of got invited along. I don't think we'd done anything.
Can I just say, there was only about 30 people there.
Hardly anyone there.
It was really intimate. It was the most extraordinary night, and you blagged it.
Yeah. It was a month after my daughter had been born. So it was me and my wife's first date after our first baby.
Have you even donated to the MND Association?
No, I did nothing. I didn't do the ice bucket
challenge.
Someone
get a bucket. Let's do it now.
I hate people who've got motor neurone disease. Very prejudiced against them.
Stephen Hawking was there.
I know, Stephen Hawking was there.
I bet you even went and said hello to him as well, didn't you? You really made the most of it. Believe that you have no shame.
It was a really nice dinner.
Like, oh, this is great. I've been a big fan. This is fantastic. He's obviously a supporter of the charity. He's done something. No, he's just
licking. I think he was trying to poach me across.
Well, Greg Davies, see, don't tell me Greg wasn't there.
I don't think Greg had done anything. I'm not sure. I mean, because me and Greg were sat at one end, I'm really confused about why we were there. With Stephen Hawking, Victoria Wood was there.
Yes.
Some people who are still
David
alive
Gower.
Were there as well. Yeah, he's still alive.
My mum?
Your mum was there? Your mum was mistaken for Greg's
mum. Yes, so my mum's about 5'2". Yeah. Greg, as we know, is 17 feet, something like that. And there was a picture, because they're, I think, Hello or OK were there. Did you even get in one of those pictures as well? I bet you did. There was a picture, it's Greg Davies with his mum. That was the caption my mum was sort of looking up in. It was amazing.
I think he might have come with his mum as well, though, Greg, so I think that's where the confusion came from. But
yes.
My wife, we weren't allowed to take my mobile phones in. We had to put them in my wife, because we just had a baby like a month before. And my wife, this is the first time we'd ever been away from the baby. So my wife snuck in her mobile phone against the rules and took it in.
Just literally no respect whatsoever.
Took a few photos of Princess Anne. It was quite good. It was nice to go into the Buckingham Palace, wasn't it? And be in the midst of that.
But it was lovely to go into Buckingham Palace. But also, like, you go through a few of the state rooms, which if you've ever been to Buckingham Palace, you get to go.
Of course,
through.
They haven't. They're scum.
Like, they're some not like of the you, work
they're not like they're not like you and me, Ben.
And but we were taken into some of the really private, secret. Do you remember that when she came out, we were in the white room or whatever, one of the studies, and she came out through a secret door.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It was so cool. I mean, like, literally, this wall panel suddenly just went backwards, and we're like, "What's that?" And she came through with a couple of people, and then sort of had a lovely chat. Did you talk to her?
Yeah, we talked. We were together. That's when I met you and Princess Anne at the same time. And I can't remember what she said because I was so impressed to meet you.
So what? Do you remember what you asked her?
I don't. I can't remember what you were talking about. We were so tired. She is at least the acceptable face of the royal family. I liked her.
She was
great. She's one of the good ones, right?
She was great.
Hopefully. Touch wood. I like her a lot. I do. I really liked her. I thought she was very down to earth.
Yeah.
And very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with you lot blagging your way in.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I didn't even touch an ice cube.
Unbelievable. You owe them. You owe them something.
I think you got into trouble because I think Scope thought he was trying to steal me from Scope to them.
Well, like, so, like you're in hot demand at Scope.
Because I was doing like a random marathon for them, and I do collections for them.
Do they have you on a wall saying, where's our hot assets?
They should do.
We need to look after and nurture him.
They should. I'll do a lot for Scope, but, you know. I do a lot for charity, so much that other charities invite me to dinners in the hope of getting me across. Look, I want to talk. There's so much I want to talk to you about. We've done so well already, Ben. It's been, you know, I thought we might talk about tipping point the whole time, but you've had three world records in your time, and you still hold one of them, I believe.
Yes, I think I do, by virtue of the fact that no one's ever tried to do it again.
I was thinking I might try it, but...
Go for it. I guarantee you won't be able to do it. Oh, no, I think it's eminently doable by somebody. I'm just saying not you.
Okay. What is the one you've got still?
So I think it's the Smashing Pumpkins one.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
How many pumpkins can you smash in a minute?
Yeah. How many did you do?
Am I right in saying I did 12?
I don't know. It doesn't say.
I think I did about 11 or 12.
Right.
And the other three people, Chris Evans was one of them. Yeah. I think Joe Swash might have been the other... And one of the others, I think they, and Peter Andre maybe, I think they did three between them.
Okay.
I got a bit carried away. In fact, got so carried away, they gave us a hammer, you had to smash. So carried away, I hit myself in the head with the hammer. Right. So by the time I finished it, it was sort of some blood dripping. I'm going to win this thing.
Do you think the others just stopped because they were looking, you're going, what's this maniac?
Nutter. Yeah.
So how much do you have to smash them to count as a smash?
You've got to break it in half. It's got to break down in half. Okay. So you get given a hammer. I know.
Minute? 10?
A minute. How many?
I can do 30.
Let's see.
Bring out the pumpkins.
And the ice bucket.
Because the other two world records have been beaten.
Mm-hmm.
And what's enjoyable is they've both been beaten by celebrities.
Yes, of course.
The highest reverse bungee jump.
Yeah.
How high did you do?
I went 180 something feet.
Right.
With higher than Nelson's Column.
What does reverse mean? Like you're just back front in the harness or they start at the bottom and push you up?
Yeah. So, harness is painful. So you've got your tied to the ground.
Yeah.
They extend the elastic cable upwards.
Yeah.
On a cherry picker or whatever it is, and then on a certain count they pull the pin and you go flinging up into the air.
Okay.
Like that. Yeah. So about 280 feet, I think I went.
Okay. Who beat that record?
Am I right in saying it was the Hoff?
It was.
So no sort of qualms about him taking it off of me. The really funny thing about that, this is actually true. We did that. I was doing a show with Fern at the time, and Fern Cotton, we co-hosted it, was for Sky. So we had to do all these challenges.
Right.
And so she was doing it and I was doing it, and I happened to go further, so I got the record. But that Christmas, my brother-in-law bought Sam and Jack, my kids, some top trumps, and it was Guinness World Record top trumps. And they happened to be playing it, and one of them was me, like genuinely. And like, I had no idea. And so they were playing top. I was rubbish, though. I was really bad. It was the worst. They were like fighting over who had to have me as the top trump. It was the opposite of what you want. But that, yeah, so I made it into top trumps, but the Hoff's got that on now.
Yeah. Surely that's just whoever sets up the thing, though. There's no skill in it, is there?
No, I'd like to think there is, but no. The Smashing Pumpkins is much more of a challenge.
There's a lot of skill in that. And then your other one was... most pancakes tossed in a minute.
Yeah.
How many did you do? How many pancakes?
I did 120.
That's pretty good.
Yes. And I heard you had someone on who had this record previously to me, I think.
Really?
Or it was on another podcast. And I can't remember who it was. And they couldn't remember. I remember doing it because it's 2 a second, right, Rich?
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, thank you. Is it
the same pancake or 200?
Pancake. So pancakes in the pan.
Yeah.
Clock starts, you go.
Okay.
So 120 in a minute.
Yeah.
And then I think it was beaten the next day, though.
It was beaten the day after.
Was it the day after?
Do you remember who beat you in that one?
It was a chef, wasn't it?
It was.
Was it a chef?
Yeah.
Aldo. Was it Aldo Zilli?
It was Aldo Zilli, correct.
Blooming Aldo Zilli.
Yeah.
Bane of my life. Yeah, he's a bigger tosser.
Yeah. Very good.
Have you done Aldo? Was it Aldo you were talking to?
No.
No. Maybe that was on something else.
It might, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. I just wipe it out of my head once it's over. It's, you know,
only so much bandwidth, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't listen back to these.
Probably best.
Well, three world records, not bad. And also, you did start out and want to be an actor when you were starting out, and you have acted in a few things. And there's some surprising credits.
Is there?
That I had to double check were real, because you were saying I was going to pop in and put... But you were in Friends?
Yes. Yeah, I am in Friends.
Yeah.
Every now and again I get messages from people on social media just going, I've just seen you. The one where Joey's late. Any Friends fans in? No, different crowd, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's not many around the world, is there?
We could have David Schwimmer on here. They wouldn't come and see him.
They wouldn't come out.
Matt LeBlanc. They wouldn't come out
for him. Yeah, so it was one of those things. We were doing a set visit to the set of Friends, which was really incredible. I mean, it's an amazing setup over there. And we weren't allowed to speak to the cast, but we could speak to Martha Kaufman, who is one of the exec producers you see at the end of the credits. And that night, we knew that they were filming Joey's premiere. And the crew that I was with, it was the sort of thing we were doing a lot of at the time. And I said to the boys that I was with, I said, do you fancy trying to be in the episode? And they said, how are you going to get in the episode? I said, leave this to me. And Martha Kaufman was sitting there and we're chatting away. She was really lovely, just obviously, you know, talking everything about Friends. And I said, oh, what are you filming tonight? We're filming a premiere. So we'll have a red carpet and there'll be crews and all that stuff. I said, oh, that's going to be really interesting for us to see. Because that's what we do all the time. We're at premieres and this, that and the other. So it'd be great to watch the Hollywood version of that. And she went, I've got a great idea. Would you guys like to be on the red carpet? I'm like, well, that's amazing. Yeah, we'd love, really? Is that all right? So she sort of invited us down. And there's this brilliant moment. And this is the only reason you can see me. It's because what they said was, so there's all these crews lined up. And Joey and Chandler get out. And they walk down the red carpet like this. And the camera's shooting up the red carpet. And they said, right, so don't lean over the rope. And don't look at the camera down there. And so we stood there. And all these, and they get out. And they're walking down. And my producer just shoved me like this. And I've leant right out, looked at the camera and gone, stuck my mic out, Joey, like this, and you can see this. You see Matthew Perry look at me, sort of reel backwards. They're not supposed to be coming near us. He reels backwards and looked at me like I'm mad, trying to chat. But of course, the whole thing is done in silence because they're doing their lines. So yeah. There's all this sort of hubbub is put in the edit afterwards. But it was a genuinely amazing experience. Yeah. Sort of doing that and being in there.
Were you disappointed you weren't asked to the reunion, be on the reunion episode?
I was. Yeah. I was, but I decided that it wasn't about me.
Okay.
I shouldn't be there.
And you're in Harry Potter.
Is that the same yes. deal? Now that's really cool.
That is cool.
I did a series of documentaries, Behind the Magic,
right.
On sort of three, four, five and six. And I had a part in The Half-Blood Prince. Didn't look unlike yourself. Long flowing locks and a moustache and beard.
They did you up.
Yeah, to look like a young Sirius Black. I was a wizarding parent, so I'm in all of about 24 frames in the scene at George and his brothers Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes in the shop.
Yeah.
And they walk past us. But brilliantly, one of the kids that was one of my kids in that was the son of the head of publicity, a lovely woman called Vanessa. And she went to David Yates, who was the producer. She watched the first pass and they had us at a certain point. And she went over to David and she said, David, you know Ben's doing this. He's got to be more in shot. Get Ben more in shot. And the only reason was, so I took her son with me. So as Harry and Ron and Hermione walked past, we're right there with me and her son. But it was, that was... the sad thing for me about that is that my boys were too little at the time to really... I mean, they love and adored Harry Potter as they've grown up. But that all happened before they were big enough to be able to come down, because that's the sets that they do. And if you ever get to go to Leavesden, to the Harry Potter Theatre, it's just mind-blowing.
Sure.
Incredibly talented people. And to be there, and we were there when they finished filming on one of the days and stuff, and watch those kids grow up was real. That was a real sort of privilege.
And you felt up Julie Walters during
that? Funny that you were drawn to that. I did.
Yeah.
Accidentally, obviously, Rich. She had a lot of padding.
Yeah,
and I didn't realise, but I managed to grab a sort of bit of Walter Weasley's chest.
Right.
She didn't seem to mind, by the way. she brought it up, and she was sort of quite happy about it.
Okay.
When I say happy, I don't mean happy. She thought it was funny.
Yeah, okay.
And I was mortified. She's national treasure. What are you doing?
She is. Leave her alone. and you also, talking about famous people's breasts... You've also peeping tommed on Kate Garraway's breasts as well. I'm not trying to out you here. I'm not trying to get you into trouble.
Sounds like you're doing your best. You know, I said, like, when I'm listening to the hot podcast, I get really hot when you're talking about it. I'm suddenly in it now and getting hot. So Kate used to live... We used to live around the corner for each other in North London. And... do you know, I didn't tell anyone this for years. And then I made the mistake of telling Chris Moyles. And he then went on the radio the next day and told the story. So then he said, you've got to tell Kate because I'm going to tell this story. So I had to tell her. So I went and I was meeting her for a cup of tea or for lunch or something like that. And I lived over the road. And I sort of cycled over to her house. And she lived in North London. There's lots of sort of townhouses in North London. And the basement is often the kitchen. And then there's sort of very tall, narrow houses. The basement's the kitchen. So the bit below ground is the kitchen. And I've cycled up. And of course, Kate has completely forgotten or is, you know, disorganised and hadn't organised herself. Well, not maybe she wasn't. Maybe she was. Maybe it was intended. Now I come to think about it. I'm locking up my bike and I can see into the kitchen. And then all of a sudden, Kate, who's clearly been asleep because we've been up early, walked into the kitchen topless. But she's below ground level, so she's not thinking anyone's looking. So she wasn't expecting me to be leaning in to tie my bike up. And I had one of those moments where I just literally froze. I thought, if I don't move, she might not see me. Do I want to... Oh, my God, what am I doing? And then, like, it's like you can't stop staring. I'm like, look, stop staring at her boobs. And she was just pottering around, and I just really quietly unclipped my bike and sort of slid out sideways, cycled home and never said anything. I didn't say, Kate, I didn't phone her and say, well, I'm coming around for a cup of tea. All right, come around. I was so embarrassed that I'd seen her like that. Yeah. And it was years later, I eventually told her.
Yeah.
And she was, and I said, I've got something I've got to tell you. She said, what is it? And I said, I don't know if you remember, and I came around and locked the bike up and you walked in, you were topless. And I'm really sorry, it was about 10 years ago. She was, but that's wonderful. 10 years ago, they would have been fabulous. Pre-kids and everything. She was like, how did it? I said, look, Kate, let's not dwell on how it looked. I'm just embarrassed that it all happened. But brilliant. Kate being brilliant and amazing that she is. She thought it was absolutely hysterical.
Oh, good. Well, you probably won't get into trouble. You did. I saw it you talking about it on the show. So, you know, I haven't got an exclusive. It is... weird when you go back and look at a guest, and I have this all the time with people, because people you've been working pretty much consistently for 25 years, I'd say, haven't you? It's probably about 25 years since you started.
It's not far off that. Yeah, thing. Yeah.
So you started as was it the bigger breakfast? Was that your first?
I started my first proper job was a show called Control Freaks on Channel 4, which was a little short promo show that on Saturdays and Sundays that just advertised the other shows that were coming. I'd done a screen test for Disney at the time, and it was to do the kids part of GMTV. So GMTV sort of gave off their Saturday and Sunday morning hours to Disney, and they did a show called Dig It or Digging It, and I did a screen test for that. And at that screen test, I met Andy Peters, who at the time was just about to go to Channel 4 to set up all of their teen brands, and the Disney guys, I did a screen test with Fern Cotton when she was 16. We did a screen test together, so we'd been friends all the way back then. And I didn't get that job, but Andy then took me to Channel 4, wanted me to launch T4, which some people might remember, but Control Freaks was the first thing, so he wanted me to start doing stuff. And then I got The Bigger Breakfast, did that with Melanie Sykes, which was incredible, and Josie Darby, and an amazing place to be. So when you look back, everyone looks back at The Big Breakfast and so it's amazing nostalgia, and they brought it back recently, didn't they? And it was great to see them down at and the house and everything, and I was part of that for a short period of my life. It was really magical.
Cool. And so the GMTV obviously was there's two versions that says Good Morning, you and
it's Good Morning Britain now.
Written now.
It was GMTV then.
It's the same, it's got the same name.
It's pretty similar.
But it went between two different, so you were in the original one, and then they changed the whole thing, and then they came back to you and said, sorry, we need you back.
It was quite like that. I mean, GMTV was a franchise.
Yeah.
So ITV didn't own it. And I came in 2000. I think it'd been going a long time since then, since 1992, something like that. And I was one of the sort of the later iterations of it. And I stayed there I started working on Entertainment Today. It was the showbiz bit I did. That's what I started. So a lot of my career at ITV is down to two amazing producers who I'm still friends with now, Misbah Alvi and Ruby Qureshi, who still work in television now. And they basically really went out of their way. And this is an absolutely true story. Misbah saw me on T4 and said, that's the guy we want to do Entertainment Today. Took my screen test, my showreel. Showreel's like your CV on tape if you work in telly. Took it to the then editor, a sort of a legend within the world of telly called Peter McHugh. Put the tape in and said, this is the guy we want to do it. And he's just a really gruff, angry man. Rubbish. He's not doing it. He's rubbish. No, no chance. So she phoned me up and she said, have you got a suit? And I said, well, I've got a suit that I wear for funerals. And she said, put your suit on, come on, do it. And she took me up to an opening of a gallery. We did a sort of an opening, a showbiz bit event at a gallery. She went, then went back, edited it with an editor, went in the next day and said, what about this guy? And he went, yeah, he'll do. He's the one. And Peter talked about that sort of, you know, and that was me having been in jeans and t-shirt and stuff and then suddenly being in a suit.
Right.
And I got my chance because Misbah really went out on a limb and right. She and Ruby really sort of nurtured us, me and Jenny Faulkner, I did that with.
Yeah.
And then I was lucky enough to sort of to keep going from there.
It's again, and you know I've been rude about Tipping Point, but you're amazing.
Yes,
you're
I do know.
You're amazing on it. It's a very, very difficult job. You do like, what, three or four of those a day?
Yeah.
And to keep it, to be that engaged with it and keep going and not just lose your temper. I would literally, I could do two of them and then I'd be punching the people.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I'd be going, oh, fucking hell. what's wrong with you? So you just say, I would not
the,
be...
But the only bit, that's interesting. Because the only bit I get angry about, because I don't get angry about them getting questions wrong. I love all that, because I understand the pressure they're in. I don't get angry about... The only bit that I get angry about is when they release the counter at the wrong time. Because that is perhaps the only bit of skill in the game.
Yeah.
Genuinely, you know, that's what's great about it. The one thing we're asking you to do is release the counter as the shelf turns.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how bad people are at it. And that's what... It gets to the point where you're like, right, okay, everyone stop for a second. You do know what you're doing wrong. Yeah. Okay. Let's go again. When do you want to go? Release it completely the wrong time again. And that's the only bit that I would get angry. But yeah. I'd love that
well,
as well.
I'd be angry about all of it. But it's a proper skill, and for you to be able to do essentially the same thing over and over again 1,000 times a show, really, it's like hundreds of times a show, and make it interesting is incredible. And something like GMTV is a very, very difficult job, right? Because you're going from very light trivial things into very serious things. You're interviewing like pop stars and then interviewing politicians, so you've got to be on and presumably without very much preparation for any of this, if it's daily.
So I went to Sky for 4 years. Well, I stayed at Sky longer, but from 2010, and that's when ITV bought the breakfast time.
Right.
So then they launched Daybreak, and then Daybreak changed to Good Morning Britain in about 2014, and that's when I sort of got invited back. And it's an extraordinary world to work in, because you suddenly realise how intimate it is as well for the viewers, because the viewers are waking up and they're in bed. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so you are in their front rooms while they're getting dressed, while they're having arguments, where they're trying to get the kids dressed, while they're putting their clothes on. So, and it has to be a little bit of everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you can get grief because sometimes we might be doing an item on Love Island and then the next minute we're talking about COVID with the Prime Minister or, well, not the Prime Minister, he won't come on. But, you know, one of the sort of the Home Secretary or the Health Secretary. And we have to be able to move between those things seamlessly. They talk, you know, and that's... That's a skill that I've acquired from the colleagues that I've worked with. That's not something that I had. I've been very lucky that I've worked with some incredible journalists over my time on The Breakfast Show, whether that was a GMTV or Good Morning Britain. Mm-hmm. And they're the reason that I can do it. But it is a real... to be in that position, to be bringing people their news. I've been there and I've broken really serious news to people that you know is going to go on and have an impact on their lives. And that is not something we take lightly. We've got a brilliant team behind the scenes so that we get briefs on every single interview. And those briefs will be very detailed and we've got to try and assimilate all that information. And then we've got to put it into a 6, 7, 8 minute interview. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, there's all sorts of things happening. So there's breaking news happening or satellite feeds might go down. And you've just got to be able to be agile and move with it. And that's what it's very addictive. Sort of aside from the early mornings and stuff, doing it is really addictive. There's nowhere quite like it. Being in that live environment and having to deal with what's thrown at you is something that sort of, you know, you sort of feed off, because it's very intense. It's really, really intense. But also brilliant laugh. I mean, I just really love it.
But that's, you know, when you watch the clips, you sort of see how relaxed you all are together. You're bantering with each other and you're pushing things a little bit. Sometimes it gets a little bit risque, but only what will be allowed on morning TV, which, again, is a very specific skill to not push things too far.
You know, it's a behemoth. It's a massive team. It's 24-hour newsroom that's working, and then we are on air from 6 till 9, and then it passes on to Lorraine and then on to This Morning. And there's an incredible team behind that sort of making it work, and it doesn't stop. You know, the Breakfast Show existed before I got there. The Breakfast Show will exist after I've gone, and it will keep delivering. And it's actually, you know, we can do one part of it, but the real unsung heroes are the team that have to put it together and put up with us, sort of our complaints about it and what we're trying to do and not listening to them when they're telling us to move on or asking another question when we really didn't need to and hitting break restrictions and all those sorts of things. They've got to manage that. That I think, is the really tough job, conducting us and keeping us on air. We just get to sit there and sort of, you know...
I don't know. You know, I did do, about the same time you started, I did the Lorraine show and came on and did a funny bit on the Lorraine show, and they loved it. They loved it. Like, I came in for it and they said, so I went back and did one on a Sky show and they loved it. I had all the cameramen laughing. And then I came back and did a Christmas one on the Lorraine show again and they didn't like that one.
So you did three?
I did three.
Was
and
that
then
on
I
a
never.
Sky, on a Sky One
was,
show?
No, it was the one, the middle one was on the Sky One show. The other two were in the ITV show. So they were real, and it was like, it wasn't like worth me doing because it was getting up really early, and I think they might pay me like £100.
Shop window, Rich. It's a shop window.
But yeah, that's it. But
kill for that now, right?
The third. I don't think. I could have been you, is what I'm saying, if I'd only played my cards right. I think the thing I did was we were doing kitschy Christmas gifts, and that one of them was a snow globe with Joseph with Jesus on his back that you'd shape. And I said that'd be good for any kids who live with someone who isn't their real dad. so they could give that to their stepdad because Joseph isn't Jesus' real dad. I think there was also a bit where I had to hold hands with Lorraine wearing these mittens that were like lovers' mittens, things that we shared a mitten in the middle. I can't remember what I said, but it was inappropriate, I guess.
I can't believe she wouldn't have liked inappropriate.
They loved me until that one. That's all I'm saying. I did that one and then I was out.
Not read the room, is that the problem?
I don't know. I think I maybe got overexcited like Hank Kingsley from my two successes and then went too far. But what I'm saying, it's a hard job because you've got to, you know, it's a very difficult audience, and it's an audience of, you know, it could be anyone, couldn't it? And so you're very good at being the right side of the line, which I would not be very good at.
I think that occasionally you go the wrong side. It's getting easier and easier to find yourself on the wrong side of the line without trying as well. And that can happen, but I think we've always had this thing that, you know, if you're going to say it live on television, you've got to know what that's going to look like the next morning in the Daily Mail, or what it's going to look like if someone tweets it. So you've got to. We are all very conscious of that now. That is something that has changed dramatically over the last few years.
Sure.
And we are all very aware of it. But even without realizing, suddenly you will say something and find yourself in hot water. You kind of go, that was never my intention. Can't believe that's happened, why that's happened like that. And you kind of have to sort of thicken up and be prepared to have people sort of say those sort of things or just ignore it.
Yeah. You know? Well, it goes, but it's that sort of thing that when you do cross the line, it's the kind of thing that's news for a day and then they're on to the next thing.
I mean, it's less than a day.
Yeah, it's interesting. So what's that going to...
Oh, Dad, it's gonna... the way you're seamless with these questions that I've always admired.
So I can cut this. I'll cut this.
Flow.
I'll cut this bit out. So I don't look bad. Got any tips on interviewing? How to interview?
Don't
people?
Read it out of a book.
Yeah. Got to get it. Oh, that's what I was going to ask
you.
It's not even in the book.
Oh,
that's why I thought of something. There was a bit. I saw a clip where you didn't know what the aubergine emoji was.
This is true.
Did you generally not know what
this
the aubergine?
This is absolutely true. And it was my friend Misbah, who I told you about earlier.
Yeah.
It was Misbah. We had been merrily sharing aubergine emojis until it was explained to me by a sex advisor or someone like that.
The clip I've seen is just all the presenters and you're kind of going, yeah, we have aubergines. It's just funny, isn't it, sending an aubergine.
An aubergine.
And going, you can't send an aubergine. Oh, it was
yeah, it was someone advising on dating or...
Yeah,
or
dating.
Yeah, it was a
and then you're going,
sex
you can't
specialist.
Send an emoji. You go, what if you're a greengrocer? You're going like this.
How can
you be that innocent?
When I saw her after that, she actually bought me the biggest aubergine she could find. So then that day, I was walking down the street with this enormous aubergine.
But she must have known. Your friend must have known.
No!
She was sending you aubergines and you didn't. You were going, yeah, aubergine, aubergine.
We were both blissfully ignorant. We are not quite as worldly wise as you'd imagine.
And how have you stayed looking like you're 25 years old? Because you can't be, because you've been going for that long. So
no, how so are you? What are you asking my regime?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, have you sort of? If you've made some pact with the devil, you don't seem to age.
No, I think I do quite dramatically. I have done in the last couple of years.
I mean, you've got to be kicking on for 50 now.
I'm 46, 47 yeah. In December.
Okay. I mean, you look good for...
Thanks.
Very good-looking young
Thanks.
Man, isn't he?
Thank you. Oh.
He's gorgeous. Lou likes you.
Nice. Wasn't expecting that, but that's great.
Well, anyone in the front row is yours. I have that. I have that power. Yeah, I want to...
That's
yeah.
Really anything. Let's do it.
Is it genes or are you virgin blood or
my mum's side of the family? I wouldn't say my dad's side of the family necessarily haven't been afflicted by aging. But my mum's and her sister, my auntie Jan is 80 and she doesn't look 80 at all. She looks really young. And my mum as well. They're sort of very sprightly and sort of. Is it an attitude, really, Rich, that sort of helps you stay young rather than...
No.
I mean, because the reason you look so old is you're so grumpy. And if you could just turn that enthusiasm around, then I don't know.
Nice, though, for you, isn't it? I imagine you're very...
I don't think I've ever really considered it.
Oh.
I look at myself and think, God, you look really tired. That's my first and foremost. You look really tired and you look really old.
So. But you work very hard, so you should look more. And you'll get up early in the morning and then... Doing shows all day. I mean, you do. There's just a lot of work has gone in to get to.
Yeah, it's a bit of graft, but I feel old. I don't. Yeah, I've got a knackered knee, a knackered back. I'm falling apart. Literally, it's all internal.
Okay. Are you still running? Because I ran 11 miles yesterday.
I heard. Yeah.
But then I looked at how far you run, and that doesn't feel quite.
How fast did you do your 11 miles?
I did it in one. I did it in 1 hour 50 something.
Did you run it?
It was up some hills.
Oh, okay.
But it was about six.
You
six
do, you're doing, are you doing, did you do a half marathon recently?
I'm doing a half marathon in 2.5 weeks.
Okay. Are you going to do sub 2 hours?
I hope so. One hour 57 is my best, but the 1 hour 47 is my best.
Oh,
but
wow.
The,
that's 1 hour 47.
But this is uphill and stuff and down, but downhill.
Are you
as
getting
well,
your excuses in early?
Well, I just think it's going to be quite hard.
And yeah.
It was 7 years ago.
I've always loved running. I think there's something really special about it. The ease that you can just put on your trainers and get out and just go. And I'm not very good at doing nothing. And it just allows me to stop sort of my mind racing and thinking and stuff like that. You're just focusing on what you're doing. But sadly, I've got a sort of pretty knackered back from just a lot of sort of rugby and football and running over the years. So I can't run very far. I can't do a marathon again because I've sort of problems with my spine. So I've had an operation on that. So the distance has come down. I can still do it. But then I knackered my knee earlier in the year and I ruptured the ACL, the MCL, tore the meniscus, fractured the kneecap, just played football and then carried on playing because it seemed like a good idea at the time. So I'm very conscious now that I've got two boys that are 16 and 14. You've got your kids. And actually, I just want to be able to do stuff with them, play golf, go, you know, mess around and stuff.
Yeah.
So sort of my... physical output has changed quite dramatically. The thing I miss the most, though, is running and not being able to do a marathon. Is nonsense, but even a half, I don't think I could even do a half marathon anymore.
But you did. Would you the coast to coast?
Yeah.
So was that like 156 miles?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. So a very good friend of mine, Ivan and Nadine, they have a son called Seb, and Seb was born with a heart defect, and the Freeman in Newcastle saved Seb's life. He had open heart surgery very early, and Ivan's always been a really keen runner. So. They wanted to sort of do something to raise some money. So we started doing these coast to coasts over a number of years. So when we finished, the last one we did, or the second last one we did, we cycled across, which was about 180 miles in 2 days. And then we ran five marathons back to back on the way back.
Right.
And it was, you know, it's brutal and it's stupid and painful. We did some swimming in the middle as well, actually. We swam across Derwent Water as well, just for a laugh. But we were doing it for an incredible reason. And if you've got that motivator, which was Seb, who was there and is still with us and is fighting fit and an incredible young man now, And the money that they managed to raise over the course paid for a playroom in Seb's name at the Children's Heart Unit at the Freeman. And there's a lot of kids that go in there that are having heart transplants, and they can be on there for a year and a half. They can be on the ward and more issues. So there's this incredible playroom that we all paid for by sort of putting us, and you know, the pain stopped for us, and that fight for Seb and Ivan and Nadine keeps going because sure. you know he's still growing. So it's, but there is something bonding about doing something ridiculous like that as well.
Yeah,
you know. There really is. It's just, and I, that's what I miss because of my back. I can't really do that.
Right.
So I have to do other stuff.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's very, it's pretty impressive, and it puts my half marriage. But I've only got one testicle, so you know it is.
So it's up and down.
It is when you look at it.
When you put it back.
When you look at it, you have
did
to.
You get you, did you get? You can get prosthetic ones, can't you? Did
you can. Not, I didn't. Did you,
why not?
I thought it was a bit weird. Because I think it's only for you. It's only for you. The
not just you.
Really, it is.
Not for your wife.
No one. She's not fiddling around back is there. She well,
back.
I mean, if she is, she doesn't want to get. She doesn't want to get a handful of a pretend testicle, does she?
But...
Or a mouthful of a pretend testicle. She wants the real thing. Get her to the. I've still got one. I can direct her over.
Okay.
I honestly don't think she'd notice.
You don't think she'd notice?
I don't think she'd know. If I hadn't told her that, I haven't told her that one had gone. I don't think you would. I don't think. But if people are paying attention to the backing band, then you know the front guy's not doing enough. That's what I. So if one of the blokes from E17 wasn't in the back doing that, you wouldn't notice, would you? You just go, oh, this.
So you're sort of Brian without the others.
But I decided it was a weird.
Did you look at them?
They showed me them.
Did they come on a plate and they say,
they didn't.
One of these could be yours.
I have seen it.
So do it for the caravan.
They try and match it up to the size. The
doctor, they try to match it up.
To make it the same. The doctor told me I had a very thick scrotum, so I wouldn't. It probably wouldn't notice. I haven't really. So it's
what do they sort of try and weigh it?
Well, I just said no straight away. I didn't want them. Charlie Borman, who I apparently look like,
his
taller
yeah.
version. Yeah. He's also got one testicle, and he had a prosthetic one put in.
Oh, did he?
But then it was uncomfortable when he was sitting on his motorcycle, so he took it out again. He was sitting on it.
So if you ride a motorbike, it's better to be...
Yeah, just have the one. But I prefer it, Ben. I would advise... The only issue is...
You prefer having one?
You've got two in case you lose one. So, but then you've got one, you go, ooh, what if I lose the other one? That's a bit...
That's careless.
That's
really careless.
It is to lose two.
Is there a chance you might lose the second?
Well, you know, if it came back, I guess that would be. But or, you know, just in an accident. Or my wife could bite it off because she's so obsessed with my...
Yeah, because she misses having two.
Yeah. So I just decided it was only about 3 days after the operation before it all settled down. Basically, the other one goes to the middle, so it does. It sort of is okay.
You're monobald. It's like
it's just in the middle. So,
like but there was
but about 3 days afterwards, I caught myself.
Is that like an instinct.
I just think there's room in the bed. I'm going to take it up.
Because that would be the point, right? If suddenly you're on your own, you're like that, oh, starfish in the middle. Make the most of this.
But just after the operation, I just happened to see myself in the mirror from the side. On one side, you look like a tiny boy, and then you turn around the other side, you're a grown man. I thought there might be a music hall act in it. At that moment, I thought, oh, this maybe I should have had the prosthetic. This is a bit weird. But then it all settled down.
Because you might lose some parts in the future. We're looking for a man with... sorry, Rich.
No. But, you know, if they're looking for a man with one ball...
Then you're go-to.
Yeah.
Top of the list.
Charlie Borman. Me. Nigel Farage, apparently. Hitler. Don't know why I went there to that so quickly.
He kept his other one in the Albert Hall, didn't he?
He did, yeah. So it's been okay.
Did they... Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Genuine question.
Yeah.
Did they offer you the chance to keep it?
Everyone asked this. And
because we moved into a house years ago, years and years ago, right? And, and before we had kids, I mean, with this lovely house, and Graham and Shirley were the people that owned the house. They had three boys.
Yeah.
Jake and the two twins. Jake was about 12 or 13, so he was just sort of hitting puberty. So there was sort of some hormones going off. And they had these three dogs. They had two golden retrievers, and they had this Newfoundland. Now, Newfoundland, I don't know if you know Newfoundland, some of you might, enormous dog, really big, shaggy dog. Now, Jake, unfortunately, was sort of starting to hit puberty, and the dog could sense this. And they kept coming into the room with Jake, the small 13-year-old, being pinned down by the Newfoundland, right? They kept having to rescue him from underneath the Newfoundland. So what they decided to do was they had to take the Newfoundland's balls off.
Oh, I thought they were going to take Jake's balls.
No, no, no. They may well have done that. They didn't do that. But Graham kept them and put them in a jar of formaldehyde and put them on the mantelpiece.
Yeah.
So every time we went around, as we bought the house off them, the dog was lying on the floor just looking at his balls. And it didn't move all day. I swear, all day. We'd go around. Whenever we went around, the dog was just there. Put the balls back.
I guess I would do the same. I'd sort of regret. I did. That was my first instinct when they told me they said, "Have you got any questions?" And the thing I wanted to ask. But as I've said this before, but it was, I partly was thinking this would be a great prize for Taskmaster because I knew I was doing Taskmaster Champion of Champions. And I just wimped out of asking, so I didn't ask. But they didn't offer. But I think I think they'll give it to you back for religious reasons if you want to be buried one piece.
Yeah.
But I don't think they will. Also, it was just all cancer anyway. So I think they take it away and analyse it. So they'd have just given you a mashed up ball. I don't think it would have been. But it wasn't even a ball. The whole thing was eaten up. So it wasn't really. I don't know how.
Sort of shriveled up like a walnut sort of thing.
No, it was massive.
No, it gone the other way.
Yeah, it gone. But it was all just. It was the whole thing was.
Did you really chicken out of asking?
Yeah.
It was an emotional moment, but you don't strike me as a man who's scared to ask a question.
No. She was still kind of surprised how well. I took it very well. I think she was. I think it would have freaked out. But people must do, because so many people ask me that question that they must get it asked it all the time. Yeah. But that wasn't what she was asking. Have you got any questions? Yeah, can I collect it? Do I get it back?
Well, because you have a presentation attached to it, right?
Yeah, I was attached to it.
More or less most of your life.
Yeah. I was.
Yeah.
It was a shame to lose it, but I would say it's better without it. If you want to do it as a cosmetic procedure, I just think it's nice. It's more, you know, it's better for running.
Yes.
More wind resistant.
Better for bike. So, you know, when you go to Hollywood and they go, what sort of nose you like? I'll have Brad Pitt's nose. I'll have Tom Cruise's shoulders. I'll have Richard Herring's fallback.
Yeah.
I'll go for that.
It's better, but it also is just much more comfortable.
Is it?
Yeah, because
I'm not that uncomfortable at the moment.
Well, I was big. I had a big board, got bigger, but it was big before.
Was it disproportionately, pre-illness?
It was quite big, I think. And it was big enough that I didn't notice that it had got sort of bigger.
Had it been commented on previously?
Would you do this on GMTV? This way you would go.
It's your podcast, not mine.
It hadn't been. I nearly, you know, I'm lucky that I bothered to go to the doctor because I just thought this is a bit weird, but I didn't go immediately. So
because you were used to them being big,
yeah. But I thought also like
was it like Buster Gonad in Viz?
It wasn't quite. It was getting that way. It was definitely bigger. But also I thought, oh, you get older and you know everyone can say
yes.
You sit on your testicles and stuff and all that sort of. So I thought, oh, maybe this is just me getting older and it's just the gravity
like
taking
a space hopper.
You should know all about the gravity. It's gravity taking its effect. You'd have seen me. You'd have taken one look at me
straight
and gone,
away.
Richard, something's going on down there with your counters.
That's not falling like it should. There's magnets.
Well, look, I haven't even asked you any emergency questions. We're going to have to wrap up. And there was loads more I was going to talk to you about. Just looking at my little book. You should have a little book like this. Got Pickle Rick on it. I'll ask you one emergency question. Ben Shepherd, have you ever tried to suck your own cock? I haven't asked anyone for a while.
I said to you, I've just been at a gym class.
Yeah.
With Judge Rind.
Rob Rind. Okay.
Rob Rind is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I was saying, I'm coming to do Richard's podcast. It's still all right. Okay. I said, listen to it. He said, no, he's very well known for asking emergency questions. He said, oh, like what? And I said, like, have you ever tried to suck your own penis? And Rob said, haven't we all? Every young boy has tried.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I did go. You're from York, aren't you?
Originally.
And I did do some filming. I did a show with the amazing Julia Bradbury. And we did a show called Mystery Map. And it was about dispelling myths and things that had happened. And there is, as I'm sure you know, as a local boy, an inn called the Guy Fawkes Inn in York. And it's supposed to be haunted. Room number 7 is supposed to be on famously. The room next door burnt down. The building next door burnt down. And the owner sort of ran out and was saved or whatever. Something happened. Anyway, they said, right, Ben, you're going to go and stay in it. And you're going to stay in the haunted room. Great. So we set it all up. I was all ready to go. And we were in the pub beforehand. If you go with the crew, though, when you're on location, everyone gets a bit carried away and excited. And we just had a few pints. Had too many pints, so when I went to bed, I just passed out. And I didn't see a thing, but quite frankly, the ghost could have been teabagging me and I wouldn't have known. Because I was in the most haunted room in what was supposed to be the most haunted inn and tavern in York, and I just slept through the whole thing. So he could well have been there.
Yeah.
Guy Fawkes or the landlord of the time could well have been running around. And
I don't think that counts.
Does that not count?
No, I don't think I was too drunk to see the drunk. Most people are drunk enough to see ghosts.
You that
too
works drunk. Usually. Yeah. That was the other one.
Well, look, we better go and let you get your sleep because you might have to get up and do... I'm guessing you're not doing the show tomorrow.
No. I'm not on GMB tomorrow.
No. Are you doing any tipping points tomorrow?
No. I'm doing a run-through for a new quiz, though.
Oh. Mm. Any good?
Yeah, we're looking for a host,
One-arm bandit?
We're looking for a host. No. It's more cerebral than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can have a word with my manager. I'd be very good on that. I don't know if I...
I'd
tell people to fuck off. I've just told... I'd swear at people. I'd get bored after doing three shows.
Are you like, the best in your price range? Is that
I'm definitely that.
Yeah.
I'm definitely that. I'm going to pitch some ideas to get next week's guests. So I won't need any jobs. I'll be a millionaire after next week's show.
That's a guarantee.
Absolutely guaranteed. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause to the incredible Ben Shepherd! See you next time. Come back and be better than last week's audience. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Ben Shepherd. The music is by Scant Regard. Thank you very much. I am indebted to Ben Walker, my producer. Nearly forgot his name. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one. From Go Faster Stripe and everyone at Go Faster Stripe and everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre and all my friends and family and everyone who knows me. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.